Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 96 of season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is my good friend Mark Hoffmeyer from the Deep Blue Sea Pod and Movies, Films, and Flicks. Welcome back to the show this season, Mark.
Hey, and I prepared for this. I am currently on a container ship making its way across the Atlantic for this episode, just to let you know.
That's very important. That's very important. Yeah, we will talk about that. I actually have some very interesting facts about that. But well, we'll get there. You're jumping ahead a little bit, jumping off the bridge a little too soon.
That's how I got on it.
I realize that, you know.
I'm not a pain. I'm a stowaway.
Okay. Makes sense.
I didn't rip anybody in half.
No, not yet. Not yet. We're not there yet either. We're almost there. So minute 96 begins with a truck taking a dip in the Hudson and ends with one of Targo's men giving him an update. So as you alluded to, on Friday we talked all about the fact that John and Zeus were, I guess, I don't even know if it's called repelling. What would you call it, what they were doing on the cable? Like what do you think the official term is? No, when they're moving hand over hand across the cable. Traversing?
Climbing down. Traversing? Just climbing down a wire.
Okay, but okay, and then the cable
repelling on that thing.
No, repelling is basically going down. That's right.
And you're
that's
not right. Sliding so on that thing. Your hands will become spaghetti.
No, but like if you think of cliffhanger, okay, so the beginning scene when you have Stallone crawling across the cable. So what would you call that? What he's doing there. I'm trying for the last few days to figure out what the term is for that. Yeah, that's why I was thinking really traverse. I don't know if it's traverse. Yeah.
I mean, because you're not climbing. You're not technically hanging. You're not rappelling. You're just sort of traveling across. You're crawling across upside down.
Right, because that's more or less
traversing a cable.
Okay, so that's more or less what John and Zeus are doing here, except it's at an angle, taking them somewhat downward as they're doing that. That type of thing. And so, the cable has run out, and basically the ship has pulled the truck with them, and John and Zeus realize that they have a little bit of a problem there. And, as we left everything on Friday, the cable was swinging downwards with the two of them basically holding on. Right. Yeah, it really is. It's great. It was a great place to keep everyone over the weekend. Awesome. And the first thing that we see is a long shot of the ship. So I know that you're right now, on a cargo ship somewhere. But did you notice the name of this cargo ship?
Remarco Lines, Forest Swan.
Well, first of all, it's Tremarco. I think there's a T there.
Tremarco. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Forest Swan.
Okay, the Forest Swan. So I did a search to see if this is a real ship, okay, called the Forest Swan. And it turns out it is. And I basically have a list of all the different names of the ship. The ship has been renamed numerous times. Okay, currently today it's called Hivatanes, Hvitanes. It is now considered a Norwegian ship. Okay, it was built in 1980. I mean, again, I have the entire history of this ship, but I could also tell you where it is right this minute. You can go online and find out where the ship is. The ship has just moored less than 2 minutes ago from at the time that we are currently recording this. Okay, just a little bit behind the scenes, behind the curtain for everybody. This is the end of July. Okay, this ship is right now in Floro, Norway, and it just arrived 2 minutes ago.
Wow.
In at that. And the call sign is LAWTS, anyone who's looking for it. I mean, there's tons of information that you can find out about it. I mean, it was just 2.5 hours, just a few hours ago. It was in Meløy, Norway. You know, it keeps moving around Norway and stuff like that. But again, it's just really cool that you can go online and find where this ship is that they filmed. Well, I don't know if they filmed it on the ship, but that, you know, they did at least the external shots looking at the ship. This ship was known as the Far Swan only in 1994. It's been renamed numerous times. It was known as the Canis. It was known as the Jerome B. It was known as the Tananger. It was known as the HYT. And now, as I mentioned earlier, it's known as the H Vitanis. It is, its gross tonnage is 4,636 tons, and the dead weight is 4,380 tons. Its length is 102 meters. Its breadth is 16 meters. So again, I mean, this is just amazing. You can find out all this information about it.
What's the, what is the crane load on it? Because that crane is gorgeous. Like, I love cranes. Like, what is that? What's the
that's not information that I see here. Okay. So sorry, I can't give you that information. But again, it's amazing the amount of information that they have here. You know, and
I'm looking at it right now. It's great.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, you're there in Norway right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm on it.
You're on it.
Like, I just had some salted cod with the captain. We're hanging out, right? We're talking about the Norwegian football squad and Erling Haaland and Martin Odegaard, and we're hanging out. They're going to show me some sights later. I'm excited. Yeah. This is what happens. Good things happen when you stow away on a cargo ship to record an episode about Die Hard with a Vengeance.
That's true.
I'm meeting lifelong friends on this. And I think I got you guests for if you ever need them. They want to talk with you.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So I mean, I did a search for the shipping company Tremarco Lines, and I couldn't find anything. I found some crazy stuff about it, but it wasn't. There's apparently like a communications company that's called Tremarco, but it's not this. You know, so
I love it.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what's interesting? I just found a list of fictional ships, and they're saying that this is a fictional ship, but it's not. This was a real ship.
That's right.
So this list on Wikipedia is wrong.
Maybe they only renamed it for the movie. I don't know.
Oh, but then it was still a ship. It wasn't a fictional ship.
Correct. No, it was from Swan Shipping. It was a Panamanian company at the time that was running it, and they ran it from July 93 till September 95, when it was bought up by a company in Bergen. I don't know where Bergen is. It sounds like it's something in Scandinavia. And that's when they renamed it the Tananger.
Can I go on a quick 1 minute thing about movies and boats?
Of course you can.
Real quick. It's like Patriot Games, great boat scene. Captain Ron was all boats. My buddies and I used to look at boat magazines because we love Captain Ron so much. I got Waterworld. This. I feel like, you know, Hunt for Red October. There's Dead Calm. There's a lot of boat movies. I feel like there's more boat movies. Face Off had a boat chase. I don't feel like there's that many boat chases anymore. I feel like the 90s, Striking Distance with Bruce Willis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like there was a lot of boat scenes in 90s movies. But I don't think there's that many anymore. Like I miss those kind of things. Like I love a good like Under Siege. Like there's a lot of water. A lot of water action, and I miss water.
Well, that's
action.
One of the things that you and Jay are trying to find. You know, as many movies as possible dealing with, you know, stuff that's happening out at sea.
You're right. So. And I'm telling you, I used to sit with magazines with my buddies in our shop class, and we would sit there and just talk. Well, we would do our work, and then we would look at boat magazines. Because Rookie of the Year, they built a boat. They had an old boat, they put an engine on it, and they just rode it around. So my buddies and I went around looking for boats and engines that we could put onto a boat because we lived in Florida and there were springs everywhere. See, I was a big boat guy in the 90s.
Apparently.
I want you to know that.
That's good. I remember all your stories, that you've told over the years on the show, about almost getting killed in St. Louis
Oh gosh, yeah, that was.
by an ice pick.
I'll never be the same after that one. That was crazy. That was nuts. But yeah, like boats, like we love cool running. So we found the biggest hill we could find in our Florida neighborhood,
To
which
do
wasn't big.
bobsledding?
Well, we just found a little thing with four wheels and we packed like three people on it, went down a hill, and then we just flipped. Like we didn't even go fast at all. It was just unwieldy. Like there's no injuries. Like that was kind of like my youth was like, hey, that boat looks fun. Let's go get a boat. Let's go get bit by a water moccasin or like in the way of an alligator. So yeah, that was like, yeah, but like I remember watching this and when that, oh no, we're not there yet. I'll let you get there. I'll we're on the rope. I won't go further.
Right, so they're basically the rope is or the cable is
Yeah, it's not a
now
rope. Yeah.
coming down. Okay, the truck lands in the water, and we at this point see. Now it happens really quickly, and you can't see it if you're not watching it in slow motion. But basically, the cable, basically, we're going to go back to traversing. It basically cuts. The goon, hits the goon. Let's put it that way. It hits the goon. But if you're watching it in slow motion, you can actually see something that we're going to talk a little bit about later this minute. But you can see that he's actually cut in half. And I mean, I don't know if you watched it in slow motion, but when you watch it in slow motion, you can see that there is something in the in the film that basically. Shows the two sides of the guy.
Yeah, I got to pause right there in that moment, getting ripped in half. That was
It's
one of my.
like it looks as if basically someone just sliced the piece of film or something like that. I
Oh,
mean, do you see what I'm
yeah.
talking about? That there's what looks like a little piece of plastic on the screen itself.
Oh,
If you
I mean, they must have, right? Oh, yeah. Interesting. How'd they do that?
I mean, and if you're looking at the 2 second mark, you can actually see that, and it's just amazing, that
Oh,
the
yeah.
way that again, it happens so fast that you don't see it, but subliminally, it shows us, that this guy is getting cut in half. But what from I mean, my assumption is by looking at this that they just did it on the film itself. They
You're
said
right. Yeah.
hey, let's just cut the film, and then we'll make it that the guy looks like he's being cut in half.
That was when this happened. I was 13, and I thought it was one of the coolest things I'd ever seen in my life
It's
when that
it
guy
is
got,
very cool.
which explain it's explained to me, but I was like, that's awesome. Dude gets ripped in half. I wonder on the commentary, did they say anything about it?
They didn't mention anything about it. I was hoping that they would, but they didn't.
He's a pretty good commentarian, John McTiernan. He's no Rennie Harlan, but he's still good on commentaries.
True, but they don't discuss this part. They were talking about the plot, because at this point, this is the point where the plot completely changes from the script. So like from now on, we're not gonna have anything to talk about in the script except for in passing, because there's nothing that matches up. Except for there's a few little things in the school that match up, but that's it. Other than that, there's no boat in the script. So it's there isn't really much to talk about from that perspective. But what I started thinking about is one of my favorite words in the English language, okay, is a word called defenestrate. Do you
Oh
ever hear that
yeah.
word?
Yeah, defenestrate somebody. Yeah, it's great.
What does it mean? Do you know what it means?
Like to defenestrate, rip them apart, tear them apart. You defenestrate them.
No, no,
No?
no.
Well,
Defenestrate
then I'm wrong.
is the act of killing someone by throwing them out of a window or throwing them through glass. Okay, that is the official definition of defenestrate. So, I mean, when I was looking at this, it made me think maybe there are other words in the English language that describe different types of death. So I did a search and I got a 20-page list. And obviously, I'm not going to go through the whole list. I've gone through it already, just picking some nice ones out. Most of them are just slang terms for different ways to die and stuff like that. But there are a few that I just want to point out. Now, have you ever heard the phrase augured in?
Augured in.
Yes. Augered. in.
Yeah. I no. So what's that?
Okay. So that is a
term. I know auger.
That's a term for dying via an aircraft crash.
Oh, augering.
Yeah, it's apparently mentioned quite often in the movie The Right Stuff, which or in the book The Right Stuff, which makes a lot of sense, obviously. You know, when you're dealing with that.
Yeah, they're using the right terms.
Correct. Have you ever heard the phrase "death by misadventure"?
No.
Okay, so it is a legal term for an avoidable death because it's a death resulting from someone taking too many risks.
Oh, so like if you're skateboarding and you fall off a cliff.
Correct. Exactly.
Got it.
Or if you're standing on a boat called the Forest Swan in the Hudson River and a cable, you know, and two people are cabling across, you know, so maybe that's a little dangerous to do that also. I don't know.
That's interesting. So it's like, yeah, that person was hit by lightning. Yeah, but they were holding a metal pole
exactly.
While riding a metal bike.
They were playing golf in the rain, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah, exactly. Have you ever heard the phrase "go to Davy Jones's locker"?
Yeah, it's not like drown, maybe.
Yeah,
just sink with the ship.
It's to drown or die at sea.
Well, I like that.
Yeah.
So there's like defenestrate, decapitate.
Decapitate was another one that I was going to mention.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, most I couldn't find that many that deal with different types of death, which is what I was looking for. Most of them were just like euphemisms for death. You know, like a toaster bath.
Oh, you put a toaster in the bath.
Yeah, the Groundhog Day, you know, from that perspective. Unsubscribe from life.
I guess you could call that toast.
Yes. Exactly. worm food.
Yeah, that means you're just dead and buried, right?
Exactly.
I like that, the fenestry.
Yes. I've always loved the fact that there is a word for that. It's not that, oh, he died by being thrown through a window. It's just say defenestrate, and that's it. That's why it's my favorite English language word, because it's also so unique.
Defenestration?
Yes.
Can you say defenestration?
Yes, he died by defenestration.
Oh, he was defenestrated, but then he died of defenestration.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. See, you learn something new here, Mark.
Yeah, I always thought that word was like you just get pulled apart, like when you like a horse pulls you in four parts.
No, like, that's quartered. That's quartered, exactly.
Yeah, that's quartered. Actually, I knew the answer to that one. I picked the absolute wrong thing, but the finish. Yeah, all right. So thrown through a window. That's amazing. Exactly. I like that.
Right. So after we see this guy get cut into, you know, on the film itself. You know, literally on the film. So we see that John and Zeus are still hanging on the cable. They did a pretty good job of it. I mean, Zeus has the gloves, John doesn't, and John is able to grab onto to one of the cable beams, you know, on the Far Swan, and he basically hugs it. And what's great is we get like a close up of him. We see his face, and then in the background, we see Zeus, like, falling behind him, and then he, like, pulls John back with him. Now, do you think this is a callback to the original Die Hard?
Which part?
When
he's hanging by the cable, or when he falls into the window?
When like, breaks into the window and is, you know, inside of the...
Oh, yeah. When it falls down and then pulls him out.
That's right. And then we see in the background, you know, the ring of the fire hose, you know, go below it, go behind him, and then start pulling him backwards.
I think it's just a classic problem on problem. Like, I love movies with problems on problems because, like, Die Hard. Okay, I have to jump on the side of the, you know, the building and get into a window. Oh, but there's a window that won't break, so now I have to kick it. Oh, but wait. The fire hose is breaking. Oh, but now I'm in and the thing falls and it takes me with it. Like I love problems on problems.
Yeah.
In action films. Like I love when they get more ridiculous. Like I feel like the Mission Impossible franchises are the best at problems on problems. Like, and probably even Die Hard to a certain extent. Like there's always like, I just love it. I love a problem on a problem. And I think it's an art of doing it. And this is a good example too, of like, it also speeds up the plot. If they had to climb down, I guess they could have cut I kind of like that they fall.
Yeah.
And of course, then we get a great Bruce Willis grimace face.
That's right. That was the next thing I was going to say. Do you think that they did this practically, or they did this with a green screen by just showing Bruce Willis hanging on there, and, you know, similar to what they did in Die Hard 2 with the, you know, when he was in the ejection seat?
Yeah. I mean, all right. So here we are. Oh, yeah. That's obviously green screen. Yeah. They were on a set right there. And then there was a practical fall by two stunt guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's green screen all day. It still looks good.
Yeah.
But yeah, sure. I mean, they did a good job of it. And you know what? Like, it's just nice to have his face in there, like you said, for just a few seconds. Like, oh, phew. And then boop. Oh, man. And they fall a good 40, 50 feet.
Hey, 30 feet. Mark, that is a great guess because they fall 40 feet. Yep. The reason I know this is because on the commentary, they mentioned that they fell 40 feet. So I was like, okay. Because when I was first doing my research, I asked the question, how far did they fall? And then when I was listening to the commentary, they said, oh, yeah, they fell 40 feet. And I was like, hey, there's my answer. I don't need to go research it. I'm being told right away.
You know what's interesting? They said, yes, it's possible for a human to survive a 40-foot fall, but the outcome is uncertain. That's, like they said, falling from 40 feet is a coin toss. A 60-foot is considered miraculous to survive.
Hey, come on, but it's John McClane. So,
yeah, I mean, this is action movie logic.
That's right.
I guess I always get bothered in movies when people are like, oh, he would die, but not in this world.
No.
In the Die Hard world, like air and gravity and bones are different.
Correct.
Yeah.
At least for John McClane. For John McClane.
Yeah, at least that's a good point.
Because you know,
other people fall.
That's right.
And they'd be toast.
That's right. That's right. And Zeus, I mean, Zeus looks really, really in bad shape from this fall. You know, Samuel L. Jackson does a great job pretending as he lands on this container, you know, to be in serious pain from the whole thing. You know, like you see the sweat on his face, you see the blood on his face, the sweat in his hair even, you know, and he looks like he's like drooling.
He's the best in the business at cringing and like being hurt.
Yeah.
I would put money. If someone said, Mark, who's the best in the business at believably looking like garbage during an action scene and like looking hurt? I would say Bruce Willis. Hands down. I don't think there's ever been able, because like when he's at 29 seconds, he does a little hand thing, like his hand hurts.
Yeah.
And then he does a wince. Like you actually feel like his back is bad. Like this is how he exists most days getting out of bed.
Correct.
So yeah, he does a really good job of inhabiting this John McClane character. And I love it. I love it. I think it's perfect.
Yeah. And so basically as Zeus is lying there on the container, he goes, oh boy, am I glad you talked me out of jumping.
He's the best. I love that.
But again, it's much cooler to see them, you know, on the cable trying to get across than just to have them jump. Because that's what they do in a lot of movies. Someone, you know, you'll stand on top of a bridge and a boat or a truck is going underneath and you just jump and land on it without breaking any bones, you know.
At least act hurt.
That's right.
Sure. Oh, man. This is such good. And, you know, I know you've talked about this already because you're many episodes in, but I just love that this is a year after Pulp Fiction. This is 5 years before Unbreakable. Like, I like this duo.
Yes.
Like, I like them a lot, and they had some serious heat in 95, the two of them.
That's right.
And I remember how big this movie was. And let's move on with the chapter. But this was like an event. I remember this being an event in 95. Like even 13-year-olds were excited about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is fun to watch. This was fun to revisit. And like, we'll talk about it. But I really like a lot of memories come back from watching this movie. It's nice.
Yeah. So then the two of them get off of this container and we see that John's bleeding a little bit, but they never really mention anything at this point about it. It's going to come up later as to why he's bleeding here, but it, you know, like his whole arm looks like it's been sliced.
Yeah, that's bad.
But, you know, they don't mention anything about it at this point. You know, the two of them are just, you know, wobbling along, trying to figure out what to do. And then they look down. And basically,
it's a stupid scene.
It's a stupid scene, but it's funny.
It's going to leave a blood trail.
That's true. No, it's going to leave two blood trails.
yeah.
So Zeus looks
at really confusing. Did they kill two people or one?
That's right. And so Zeus looks down and goes, oh, fuck. And you can see the look on their face. The two of them are both appalled by the look of what they're seeing here. Then it's, you know, and then John says to him, get his feet. And it's just great because you see Zeus move to the back of the camera, you know, to grab the feet, and the two of them start walking. And then, you know, it's a great gag, the fact that this guy's been dissected into two. And, you know, they don't have to show us the body. You know, they just show the fact that two of them are walking side by side, and you can get the idea as to what happened to this guy.
It's some kind of macabre humor, if you think about it. Just they're pulling a ripped in half body, and they're both selling it too. Like Samuel Jackson's face, like Zeus is just like, pulling those legs.
Right. We talked a lot about this when he was picking up the gold bar, that he also made it seem as if the gold bar was really, really heavy. You know, he did a great job of that.
You know, I distinctly remember that weight of it when he carried it, and then he left it in the back seat.
That's right.
But yeah,
of the Yugo.
When he sold, like, he really, it's for economy. And I like that he really sold that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but almost, 30 years later, I still remember the heft of that bar.
Because he does it so well. He makes us really believe the fact that he is carrying something that's quite heavy.
It's not those BS cups of coffee that people carry and they're like, woo!
That's right.
And it's like supposed to be full, and they're like sipping on it. And you're like, you're sipping from an empty coffee mug.
That's right. It's very true. And then as the two of them are dragging the two sections of this body away, the shot changes. And we see Targo and one of his men. And the guy says to him, there's something you should see. And then he gets cut off. So we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out what he's supposed to see. Or what does he need to see?
I'm nervous. I don't know what they're going to see.
It's probably not going to be a guy cut in two.
Yeah. There's two blood trails.
That's right.
They should have went one way and the other just to confuse people. And then, like, joined them.
No, that probably would have been...
People are just really confused.
That probably would have been, like, too much. You know, they probably decided that, you know, let's just let everyone use their imagination here.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You know, deleted scene. Deleted scene.
It's actually not in the deleted scenes, but yeah.
a make-believe deleted scene.
In the newer version of it. When they come out with the 30th anniversary, you know, Mark will make sure that they have it on there.
The Hofmeyer cut.
There you go. Makes sense. All right,
I'll previs.
That's right. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
You know, just I'm telling in '95, watching that scene, watching the dude get ripped in half, I was like, "Whoa! Like this is awesome! Like this movie had me." And just watching that visual, just getting ripped in half, and then the whole gag of them carrying the legs, like it's such a pointless scene. It's not really even necessary, but I like that they just took time to have a little character moment like that. And I feel like this movie's full of little character moments like that. And like, I really responded to them in the fountain and just, you know, their conversations. Like, I just love this duo of really sweaty men driving around.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think about the fact that this originally was supposed to be in a part
Simon
of,
says.
No, it was supposed to be part of the Lethal Weapon series.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I always just thought this was a random script called
Simon Says. It was a random script, and then they said, "Oh, let's put this into one of the franchises." And the first thought was to put it into Lethal Weapon.
Interesting. I mean, I don't think those two work like that. I don't think Murtaugh and Riggs do this.
I agree.
Like joking around. That's. They just murder more people. This puts them on the defensive.
No, but I personally think that the reason it wouldn't work with Lethal Weapon is because in order for this to work, you have to have these two characters who don't know each other. You can't have them as partners already. You know, that's the way I look at it. You know, if they had already been partners, it just wouldn't work as well. What's great about the chemistry between Zeus and John is the fact that these two guys pretty much hate each other from the start, but they still have amazing chemistry. Mm-hmm. And they when they put their heads together, they can work together and get things done.
That's a great point. And I love when they steal the bikes and they're like, it's Christmas.
Yeah,
that's like a wonderful line. But I think that's a good point. You
can't wait, you're talking about the kids saying it's Christmas, or you said that Zeus says it's Christmas?
No, Sam Jackson. That's right. Zeus says
it's Christmas. He says, don't you remember? It's Christmas. It's Christmas.
Yeah. I love that bit.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just watching them together, and I think they just match each other's personalities really well in this. And I think they both understood the assignment. You know, they argue, like, there's like racial tension in here. They're both kind of yelling at each other. They understand each other. I think you set up Zeus really well talking to the kids, and then you have John just being drunk and like, how are your kids? And I think they do a really good job of setting the two up, putting them together, sticking them together. Yeah, this works because of the chemistry. Like, if this was like the chill factor, if this was like Skeet Ulrich and Cuba Gooding Jr. or something, this doesn't work.
No,
I think you need. I mean, also you got to give it credit to McTiernan, because you feel the sweat of this, and it's nice seeing McClane in New York, because you know he's like, I'm New York, and then he's never in New York.
That's it.
So it's just nice to see this, and like the dirt, the sweat, the grime, the mud, the blood, and the beer. And I think that this only works if you have high caliber actors, especially with McTiernan directing, because this is kind of a nasty movie. Like, that when she takes the blade and kills that guy with a song playing in the bank, and you know, the opening sign with like his sign, like, this is a mean, people die. And it's also quite funny. Like, what if a kid finds it? Like, that's a recurring joke, but I think this works because of these two actors. This would have fallen apart had this been Hank McCluskey directing, you know, Skeet Ulrich and Cuba Gooding Jr. So yeah, I love them together. I think they're perfect together. And you're right, they have to not know each other, because that's why it works.
That's right, because they have this back and forth tension, you know, between the two of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
All right, so as I mentioned over the course of this episode, so today we're not going to go to the script, because this part is not in the script at all. So there's nothing to talk about there. So every Monday we have a segment called McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan films.
Oh, there's, man.
You only have 11 to choose from. But knowing you, you've probably seen all 11.
Yeah. No, I
see, I haven't even seen all
this
11.
This is tough. Oh, no, I haven't seen Nomads. I have not seen Nomads.
I haven't seen Nomads, and I haven't seen Rollerball. Those are the two I haven't seen.
Yeah. Oh, man, I saw Rollerball. Jeez Louise. Yeah, I need to watch Nomads. That's the one I forgot about. I just pulled up IMDb right now, and that's the one I haven't seen. But, like, Thomas Crown Affair, that one hits. I love that. Basics, I was working in a theater when Basic came out. Like, that one was really popular. That's another Sam Jackson movie. Okay.
All right. Just start.
So I need to do my top five.
Yeah. Start with your number five, and work your way up.
Oh man, that's evil. Starting with five is evil. Okay, I'm gonna do. Okay, Last Action Hero, because I watched that in '93, and I was like, this is good. This is funny. Like, I understood what they were doing in it, like the angry captain. Like, I grew up watching all these movies, and there was always a pissed off captain. But I remember that. Like, I love that angry captain. I love Jack Slater going into the real world. And, like, I was a kid who just watched movies all the time. Like, my home life wasn't great. So, like, watching movies and, like, getting sucked into the world and just the little gags with the ice cream. And, like, I was in the heyday. I was watching all the action movies at that time. And everyone hated it, I think, because of the big script from Shane Black and all the promotions. Like, I remember being 11 and people being like, this movie sucks. Like, it spent too much money. This is way before I got my hands on internet. So yeah, but I like Last Action Hero. That's my number five.
Okay.
Number four is an incredibly underrated film that I love and I have covered on Movies, Films, and Flicks, and I think is incredible. And that's The 13th Warrior. It's 6.6 on IMDb, which makes me very happy, because that's quite a high score. And I think it's one of the most, like, I know Crichton and McTiernan fought on it, but it's a big budget film that looks gorgeous. When those soldiers are attacking the fort, the shots of them in mass on horses, just the practical effects are just gorgeous. So yeah, I'm going to say that's number four. Hunt for Red October is three. It's just a very adult, mature film with a very good performance from Alec Baldwin. Like, I love Sean Connery, But I love what Baldwin does. He's kind of squirrely in it. Like, I like the squirreliness of him. And it's just a very beautiful to look at, mature, adult, excellent thriller. Okay, to Die Hard. We've already talked about that on the show, but I'll talk about it now. It's an all-time classic. All-time classic. I'm going to put Predator at one because I like how subversive it is. And I don't think it gets enough credit for it. You take the biggest, sweatiest, baddest dudes. Like, Sonny Latham needed security to keep him away from people during the shooting of it. Like, it was the sweatiest. And I just love creature features too, but you have all these burly men. You have these incredibly macho men. And they just get obliterated by this creature. So as much as people want to talk, like, Arnold becomes a final girl at the end of Predator. He becomes the final girl. Like, he has to build traps and fight this thing, and he has to run, and he's overpowered. We're watching Mr. Olympia get tossed around like a beach ball by this creature. And I love how subversive it is. I love the Stan Winston practical effects. I think the suit is gorgeous. I think the world building's gorgeous. So yeah, I am going to take Predator at number one.
All right. Excellent.
And I'm leaving out Die Hard with a Vengeance, but I love Die Hard with a Vengeance. I love.
What would you put Medicine Man,
like, six, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Okay. And then Thomas Crown would be at seven.
And then Thomas Crown. Yeah. And then Medicine Man. And then Basic, and then Rollerball.
Okay.
But Basic's good, though. Like, I'm not saying, like, this is ranking really cool movies. Like, I liked Medicine. I watched, like, my mom and dad, like, they love Connery. It was like a parent movie, Medicine Man. I'm like, Rollerball's last. That's all I'm going to say. I like all the other ones.
And, well, Nomad's last because you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. No, I haven't seen Nomad, but I don't think it's worse than Rollerball.
Okay, that is possible.
I need to watch Nomads so I can be a completist.
I probably should see it also. Especially doing a show like this, you know, make a little more sense. All right, so Mark, would you like to tell people where they can find Mark Hoffmeyer?
Oh, so in the States, if you want to watch it, it's on Tubi for free. So I can just pop on Tubi right now. Evil spirits haunt a French anthropologist. My words. I'm tired.
Anthropologist.
Guys.
I'm
a literature major. Anthropologist. Guys, I am tired. Jeez Louise. But yeah, there's anthropologist. But yeah, Moves from the Flakes, Deep Blue Sea, the podcasts. I also work for Fandom and Film Theory, and I have a Rotten Tomatoes article out. You can go read my Rotten Tomatoes stuff. And I think I have other things. Movies, films, and flicks.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Mother truckers.
Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.